Hi, I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
And you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Now, reproductive rights are some of the most contested issues of our time, and they usually centre on the question of abortion. Pro-choice advocates argue that a woman's right over her body prevails over the life over the fetus, while pro-life advocates say that the baby deserves a chance to live. An added ethical dilemma is the fact that not only do we now have the option to choose when to have a baby, but which baby to have. Dr. Megan Best is a bioethicist and palliative care doctor with Hammond Care. She's written the book Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, where she outlines a Christian approach to reproductive ethics. Megan, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Now let's start talking about the title of your book, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, which seems to suggest that human life is created. It doesn't just spring out from nowhere, but it comes from somewhere. Is it fair to say that that belief plays a crucial role in your ethics?
Yes. The quote, fearfully and wonderfully made, comes out of Psalm 139 in the Bible, which describes how God very carefully puts us together when we're growing in our mother's womb. But certainly, my whole approach to how we should treat human beings before they're born is based on the idea that we are all made in the image of our Creator God. And so we should treat every human being with respect and dignity, not because of what they can do, but just because they are made in the image of God, and it's because God needs respect that we get that respect secondhand, as you would say.
Now, can we just develop this a bit more, Megan? So this concept of being made in the image of God is the ground on which you then go on to make a whole lot of judgments on complex ethical issues. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, because our society really judges a lot of people in terms of what they can do. And when we think about how valuable people are to us, we often think, well, what do they contribute to society? How much can they earn? When we judge which babies deserve to be born, and the screening we now do says, well, are they normal? Are they perfect? And I would say, well, it doesn't depend on what their physical features are. What depends is the fact that they are a human being, and it's that alone which gives them the right to be treated with respect and protected by the state.
We'll come back to the issue of screening for disability later on in the program, but I wanted to ask you about one of the concepts you mentioned in your book, ontological continuity. Can you explain what that means and how that concept influences your ethics?
Ontological continuity means that we are the same individual from the time we are conceived through our development as an embryo, then a fetus, to the time we're born and our life going on from there. We are the same individual all the way through. And even though we look different at different stages and we have different capabilities at different stages, we are essentially the same person. And in Psalm 139, that's King David from the Bible talking about how God has been watching over him from the very start of his development, which was before he was born.
So that then creates this ethical injunction, according to a Christian perspective, to preserve life at any stage from conception, is that right?
If possible. It's not an absolute in that it's not possible to protect anybody 100% all the time, and there's sometimes vicissitudes of life or things beyond our control will make it impossible for us to save a life.
But that certainly is the intention, though.
The intention is that if possible, we protect that life.
Well, pro-choice advocates argue that a woman's right over her body overrules the fetus's right to live. Now, we know that we know your position. We can guess your position on this matter. But are you sympathetic to the fact that people feel they cannot cope with a pregnancy?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the reasons why people have abortions, it's not because they don't want to have a baby. It's more that they don't feel that it's possible for them to care for a child. Sometimes people feel they don't have the capabilities and they're not supported by people around them who help them develop those capabilities. Abortion is also associated with a lot of domestic violence. So I think that often the woman is a victim as much as the child, in that she would love to have the child, but she just doesn't see that it's possible. And so we're in a situation where abortion is so easy to procure that it's quite easy to have an abortion. What's now quite challenging for a lot of women is to keep the child.
Megan, some pro-choice activist now, saying, look, we accept that the fetus is a human being. It is alive.
And in informed debate, that's certainly the case.
But nonetheless, we say the woman has complete right over her body, and that trumps whatever is going on inside her. How do you respond to that? Because that's a bit of a shift in the way this debate's gone in past years.
Right from the start, I think abortion debates were about the need for women to be able to control what happened to their body, and I've been pregnant, and it certainly does slow you down. But the baby is not part of the woman's body. It's an individual who is residing inside the woman. But, you know, it's a different tissue type. It can be a different blood type. It can be a different gender. It's not part of the woman's body. And I would say that if we are sexually active, that the chance of becoming pregnant is part of the deal, and that we need to realise that our actions have consequences, and one of the consequences of being sexually active is that you can get pregnant. And then when we do get pregnant, that puts us in a position where we may be the only one who can provide a hospitable environment for a child, and that because that human life is valuable, that we need to respect that the right of the child for life. And rather than say the woman can only have independence and proceed with her life if she has an abortion, well, maybe we need to provide more options and say, well, we need to provide the kind of social support and flexibility in work and study arrangements which makes it possible for her life to continue, and whether or not she decides to raise the child. And that's another whole argument is how we now view adoption in our community, and that we need to be more creative in the way we think rather than just see the answer to everything is to get rid of the baby.
You mentioned earlier the Bible and how that shapes a lot of what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But of course, in this sort of public discussion, there's plenty of people who that doesn't rate at all. So it becomes really problematic to have this sort of discussion with people who don't share a worldview that perhaps you hold.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people in our community have really been brought up to think it's the end justifies the means, and what's right is what gives us the outcomes we want. Whereas Christians will hold what we call absolute values, saying, well, there are some things we shouldn't do regardless of the consequences. And that puts it at an impasse, and that's why we have parliaments that take votes and whoever has the most votes win. But that then means that there will be some things that are legal that will not be ethical for Christians.
Given that Christians have an ethical imperative to try and preserve life wherever possible, mm-hmm. are there any cases in which abortion might be morally justified?
Oh, absolutely. I think that one of my concerns about the whole abortion debate is it's been quite superficial and simplified. But as a doctor, I know that there are some situations where a child will not be mature enough to survive outside the womb, and the only chance of the mother surviving is if the pregnancy is terminated immediately. And I can think of the example of a tube of pregnancy where a child will never be able to live outside the womb. And
Is that an ectopic?
An ectopic pregnancy, right. Where the only chance a child has of survival is if by staying in the mother's womb. But the mother will die, in which case the baby will die if nothing is done. And certainly that's a very straightforward case where I think abortion is a moral imperative, because if you can't save two lives, one life is better than no life at all. So it's not that we devalue the baby, it's just that we're thinking we save what lives we can. And there are some medical conditions such as high blood pressure in late pregnancy, some particular heart problems that may mean that it is necessary, though with great regret, to end a pregnancy before a baby can survive outside the womb. And that's a medical judgment which can at times be difficult, but we certainly would try and keep those pregnancies going as long as we could. But it will be, as I said, be absolutely out of our control at times, and we won't be able to save those babies even though we'd like to.
Megan, we want to talk about disability. Mm-hmm. The activist Stella Young wrote an article expressing her discomfort with prenatal screening. She says this: screening fetuses and embryos for genetic conditions sends the implicit message that the lives of those of us living with the conditions are of lesser value. That must be a concern that you share.
Absolutely. I think that it's now becoming so routine to screen for disability in a normal pregnancy that people don't even talk about why they're having tests. And so a lot of women don't realise what their prenatal tests are for until they get the results. And that's a real problem, I think, which I discuss at length in the book. But the reason we're screening is really because we're saying, well, we only want normal babies to come to term. And then the unspoken assumption is, so if you do find an abnormality, you'll have an abortion. Because we can screen for more conditions than we can cure, we began aborting those conditions where a child couldn't be made perfect. But now we're even aborting children who have correctable problems. And I think that it's something we really need to talk about as a community, whether we are happy that we are now saying there are some standards you have to live up to if you have the right to be born. And given the fact that all of us will be disabled at some stage in our life and that more people are disabled after birth than before birth, is this what the place we really want to go as a society?
Megan, what's the alternative to terminating these fetuses who are known to going to have a problem? Is it that we need to ramp up social support for disabled people and also for those who care for disabled people?
Yes, I don't think we could possibly just stand on a box saying you should never have an abortion, even if the baby's going to be quite disabled, with no thought to supporting those people who do make what is a difficult choice. Looking forward to a lifetime of supporting a disabled child is not something that anyone would take on lightly. So I think if we advocate for that position, we also have to advocate for improved societal conditions for these families, more government support. And as individuals, I think we need to look around ourselves and see, well, are there people in this situation that I can help personally just to make it easier to bear that burden.
Can I just ask, you were mentioning before the screening for disability means that there's an automatic assumption that the baby will be terminated. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that, of course, is the creation of designer babies. Is that something that we should also be talking about, or is that sort of futuristic and we're not quite there yet?
Well, a complete designer baby, the way you see on the movie Gattaca, is really not on the horizon yet. But having said that, while most people would screen their baby to screen out what I would call a disability, there are some parents now who are screening what I would call a disability in. For example, we've had several cases now of parents who make sure their child is deaf because they want their children to share in their own
deaf culture,
yep, which they see as one of great richness. And so the conversation I think we need to have as a society is, well, what is a disability? Who decides what is a disability? Are we happy that we are making it possible for parents to have the choice of whether their child is put in a situation where they have what everyone else would call a disability?
Yeah, this is a very complex area, I can imagine.
Very complicated.
Yeah, obviously not everyone's going to agree when it comes to matters over reproductive ethics. Yeah. What do you think then is the best way forward as we navigate our differences in these sorts of areas?
I think that one thing I would like to see is a lot more nuance in the debate, where people understand more of what's going on and understanding people's motives for what they do and not just what they do, so that we can perhaps have a bit more compassion towards our opponents. I think that often in these situations there are no winners. Parents who abort a previously wanted child for disability suffer more than any other group that has abortions. It is not a straightforward, simple process, and I think we need to look at these issues with all their complexities and all the pain that is real for the individuals involved, and see what we can do, not just in terms of judging their actions, but in providing more choices for people and so they know that they have more choice than they feel they have at the moment, that getting rid of a baby is not the only option, that those who do choose to keep a child, whatever they're capable of, are going to be supported in that choice. And I think that that's where the pro-choice lobby have lost their way. We no longer have choice, really, for a lot of women. All they can really consider is to have an abortion. So I agree with the pro-choice position that women should have choices. At the moment, I don't think they do.
Thank you for your great insight into such a complex area. Megan Best's book is Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. Thank you.